religion, and healthcare policy. Do the twain meet? Sister Rosemary Flanagan either has the answer to that question or more questions about it on this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Rosemary Flanagan is a program associate at the Center for Practical Bioethics. She is presenting a lecture on religion and healthcare on July 8th in Kansas City. Rosemary, it seems like we're hearing more about a tension, even a collision between religion and healthcare. A recent example took place in Minnesota where a mother did not want cancer treatments for her 13-year-old son. Is this the type of scenario that's...
Well, the important thing is, why didn't she want the healthcare alternatives for her son? And in that particular case, and in many cases, the reasons were religious. Now, what we got to understand is that we have many motivations for doing what we do, but religion still plays a tremendously important role in people who have developed a religious consciousness, and that's what I'm trying to get the audience on.
July 8th.
To think about. I mean, to think about that root of their motivations and how often that root is connected in some way with religion.
Now, this case in Minnesota, is that becoming more commonplace? Are there a lot of cases
out
there?
I think we're hearing more about it. See,
right.
I think we've had all sorts of religiously motivated ways of acting, but we haven't heard about it. Bioethics is getting everybody's attention these days, and so we go from the bizarre to the normal, but we don't hear so much about the normal, but we hear about what seems out of step with the normal way of acting. And I was accosted yesterday. I'd given a talk to a retirement group. And
now, who was accosted?
Accosted. Well, they were asking questions. But this particular fellow waited until the question period was over. Mm-hmm. And then he lay in wait for me. And then he accosted me. And he said, he was very nice. He said, "What do you think about that case where the woman takes her son and takes him away so that he cannot have chemo?" And I said to him, "Whose son is it?" And he sort of smiled. And I think he got my point. What we're finding in healthcare today is that going the healthcare normal route, that means doing what your physician says to do, has become so ingrained in our consciousness, we don't even see an alternative. I had a friend once whose wife was dying of cancer, and he was both of them were very reasonable people, and it was a terribly long, painful struggle, and she died at the end, and they had been doing aggressive care, just thing after thing after thing after thing. And I said to him, "Mike, didn't you and Katie ever think that you could stop?" And he said, "Rosemary, those moments where looking back, I think that we could have stopped, it did not occur to us as a moment. They were on the healthcare delivery, technology-driven, what do you call those things that you do?
The chain or whatever it might be.
Sure. They were on that. They were on that.
Treadmill.
Treadmill, yeah. And they couldn't step off.
Now, you mentioned technology, and that's forcing a lot of decisions on both professionals and families. What I'm wondering about is there a line, or should there be a line, between a medical professional's obligation and his or her religious faith?
Well, see, and I think these parts of our consciousness, they've got to play on one another. Now, I know we have extreme examples, and I'm trying to keep away from extremities because I think extremities are often irrational. But there are reasonable areas where a healthcare professional's religiously motivated consciousness will lead him or her to say to a patient or a family, I can do certain things. I know how to do certain things. I am motivated not to do those things. And if you ask me why, I will tell you how my religious consciousness has led me to that. I think you can do that reasonably. I think that the person who may not share your religious consciousness could understand why that healthcare provider is suggesting what he or she is suggesting. That doesn't mean that the patient has to kowtow to that any more than they have to kowtow to the whole technological-driven treadmill.
Rosemary Flanagan joins us on the Bioethics Channel. She is presenting a lecture July the 8th in Kansas City entitled Religion, Healthcare, Do the Twain Meet? For more information and to register, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Rosemary, would it be fair to say that it comes down to moral judgments between the medical professional and the family?
Sure it does. Because, again, this consciousness of ours has so many facets to it. And moral consciousness is one of those facets. What ought we do? What's right to do? What's wrong to do? And religion, for many of us, has been a major factor in forming that moral consciousness so that when I do whatever I do and I ask myself, should I be doing this? Is this the right thing to do? If I were to trace back even that question in quiet periods that you may spend alone in a closet or something, you could often find very, very much so that religion has influenced that basic predisposition or that basic assumption that what I'm about to do may not be right or something. Yes, so I do think that moral consciousness is very much involved here, and I think that religion helps form that moral consciousness.
Now, this program interviewed two of your colleagues, Dr. John Lantos, Dr. Mm-hmm. Farr Curlin, about religion and medicine. A practical question arose during that conversation that I'll share with you. What if a patient requests a procedure or a medication that the physician believes is morally wrong? Is mm-hmm. he still obligated to mm-hmm. provide that medication or do that procedure?
See, and I just think this is the clash. This is the collision you're talking about. Most of our, I would imagine, healthcare professional lives would be spent practicing good medicine. And I would imagine very infrequently would that collision occur. But let's say that it does occur. Let's say a case where a dying patient says to the doctor, come on, doctor, I'm ready to go. Kill me. I mean, give me an overload of something, a shot. And that physician who sees that as direct killing would have to say, I can't do that, George. I can see that you will not suffer. I can help you to be unconscious. I cannot directly kill you. If you insist that your physician do something like that, I'd have to withdraw from being your physician. Now, here's the problem. Doctors can't just withdraw from cases, and so therefore that doctor would have to find a replacement. My moral problem would I find a replacement who believed in physician-assisted suicide? And I don't know how to answer that.
healthcare reform, a hot issue now. How important is it for religious consciousness to be part of that debate?
Oh, definitely. And what we're finding is in what we call the basic package for healthcare reform. What's going to be in that basic package? And if it includes, for example, abortion, euthanasia, oh, whatever, that would offend some people's consciences, would there be included in this whole reform that same respect for individual conscience which has marked healthcare professionals since the beginning?
So that's a big question with no answer at this point.
It had better. It had better. I think it will destroy. I think it will destroy the profession if those conscience clauses are not included.
So, Rosemary, you ask a question with the title title of your presentation: "Religion and Healthcare Policy." Do the twain meet? So do they?
I'm going to say yes, and I am hoping for a reasonable. Both example and a reasonable exchange of experiences that night.
Okay. Well, Sister Rosemary Flanagan is presenting a lecture entitled "Religion and Healthcare Policy, Do the Twain Meet?" on July the 8th in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, visit the Center's website at practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel. I'm your host, Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.